Hello and welcome to Iris. This is Trevor Brass bringing you the Sioux City Journal for Sunday, September 20th, 2020. Let's take a look at the 5-day forecast and see what's in store for us in the weather in area in Siouxland. Today, things will be windy with hazy sun. We can expect winds from 12 to 25 miles per hour with a high of 82. Tonight, it'll be breezy early on. It'll be mainly clear. Again, winds around 10 to 20 miles per hour, and we're looking at a low of 58 degrees. On Monday, it'll be mostly sunny. Winds 8 to 16 miles per hour, high of 82, low of 58. Tuesday, partly sunny and very warm, high of 84, low of 58. Wednesday, partly sunny and very warm, high of 86, low of 55. And Thursday, mostly sunny, a thunderstorm is possible, without looking at a high of 81 and a low of 57. So it looks like the weather will be kind of consistent with that theme, 80s in the low 80s in the day and 50s at night. So let's turn to the front page of today's paper and let's look at the mini editorial for today, which comes courtesy of Dwayne Barons of Sioux City, and he writes, "The Democrats have always maintained that the nationwide rioting has been nothing more than peaceful protesting. Someone should ask Joe and Kamala the following question. If these were truly peaceful protests, why has the insurance industry received claims for more than $1 billion for damage as a result of these peaceful protests?" Signed, Dwayne Barons of Sioux City. Alright, let's look to the front page story spread, which is about agriculture in the area, and the headline is a picture of a combine driving across a field harvesting soybean crop, and the headline is Harvest Uncertainty. Subheadline: Area Farmers Hope for Plentiful Yields Despite Dry Summer. From Sioux City. Farmers across Siouxland rejoiced this spring when ideal soil and weather conditions led to early planting. Buoyed by plentiful rains the past 2 years, the soil had a full moisture profile to support young corn and soybean plants, and optimism was high for a bumper crop. As many combines entered the field this past week, some of that optimism has faded. Much of the region experienced a dry summer and remains several inches behind normal rainfall totals. Rain, if it fell, was spotty and extremely localized in some cases this summer. It wasn't unusual to see a nice shower in one area while fields a mile or two away remained dry. The fact that we started with our soil profile at capacity for what the crop can use, that saved us this year, said Joel DeJong, an Iowa State University Extension and Outreach field agronomist based in Lamars. DeJong said he hesitates to predict yields, especially in a year in which the range is going to be all over the board. Of silage chopped so far, he's received some reports that yields were good and others weren't. He suspects that will be the case with corn and soybeans. Based on his observations, he's observed some fields of either crop that look pretty good and others that are stressed by lack of moisture. Quote, the range is really wide, he said. The latest U.S. Department of Agriculture statistics for Iowa back him up. As of September 13th, corn statewide was rated 27% poor or very poor, 31% fair, and 42% good or excellent. Soybeans were 20% poor, very poor, 32% fair, and 48% good or excellent. Nebraska and South Dakota showed higher percentages of crops rated good to excellent. Iowa's numbers can be traced directly to a lack of moisture. After experiencing the wettest two-year period since record-keeping began in 1872, the state just completed the 17th driest summer on record, state climatologist Justin Gilson said. August was the third driest on record with 1.51 inches of rain statewide and 3 inches below normal. Gilsand said much of the western Iowa is about 5 inches behind in average precipitation. Subsoil moisture in the western third of the state is at just 30% capacity. As a result, the entire region is now considered to be in drought conditions. The U.S. Drought Monitor is in all areas the tri-state Siouxland region in moderate to severe drought. Parts of Clay, Palo Alto, and Dickinson counties were about as dry as I can ever remember, until widespread rain fell across the region the week of September 7th, said Paul Castle, an ISU Extension field agronomist based in Spencer. Some of the optimism from the early planting remains, Castle said, because of the abundance of subsoil moisture that sustained crops through much of the dry growing season. Quote, we had really good potential. We lost some of it, but it could still be decent, Castle said of the upcoming harvest. We still might be able to have a pretty good crop. It's still too early to tell. By and large, it doesn't look too bad. We're cautiously optimistic. If there's any benefit to the dry summer, plants matured quickly and are drying down early. DeJong said crops and harvest are 10 to 14 days ahead of the usual pace. When interviewed on Tuesday, he expected that by the end of the week, combines would be a common sight in fields across the area. The rain earlier in September came too late to benefit this year's crops, but it will help recharge soil conditions in need of moisture. DeJong said much more rain is needed, about 10 to 12 inches in some areas, to soak in and fully recharge the soil for next spring's planting. Quote, it's going to take a lot of rain to get us back, DeJong said. Precipitation for the remainder of September is expected to be below normal, which will be good for farmers harvesting their crops, Gilson said, but there's a glimmer of hope that Iowa could experience wetter conditions late in the fall and then into spring of next year. All right, let's return back to the front page, where we get a story about Representative Steve King, the longtime representative from this area of Iowa in the U.S. House of Representatives. Headline, Steve King is writing a book. Subheadline, King lost to Randy Feenstra in the June primary. People have wondered what Steve King will do with his upcoming exit after 18 years from the U.S. House in January, and King has now revealed one big piece of his future, as he'll release a book that reviews America's culture since the 1970s. In the first journal interview since his June primary election loss by nearly 10 percentage points to fellow Republican Randy Feenstra, King said he's got much of the book done, a title selected, but he's not ready to announce the publisher. Assessing a question on whether he might join a think tank or become a television commentator, King said with a smile, quote, I don't think I'm good looking enough for TV. A full-throated critic of so-called never-Trumpers and a strong social and fiscal conservative from Kieran, King is enthused to release the book he's been writing for months. Quote, the writing is done and the last scour of the edits is still going on, he said. Quote, walking through the fire, King joked, could have a subtitle, expanding beyond those four words with coming out the other side slightly singed. King said the title is an offshoot of what the late conservative media icon Andrew Breitbart told him about times when King drew waves of criticism. Said King, quote, he'd say, walk towards the fire. Their bullets aren't real. They just want to intimidate you and call you a racist, a supremacist, and all of these names because they want you to want to shut you up and because they cannot argue effectively with your ideas. So I picked that up. I said, well, walking towards the fire is one thing, but I didn't get to stop at the fire. So the title of the book is, quote, Walking Through the Fire. King said the book isn't so much about his time in the House, but more about culture dating back to the 70s when he started his construction company near Kieran. Quote, it is more or less a narrative about what some people are willing to do for power. It is still stunning to me the level of mendacity that exists and sometimes is honored, he summarized. It also addresses the political hit King said was orchestrated by people and groups, abetted by a January 2019 New York Times article that delivered a blow 1 week after Feenstra entered the race. King has spoken about that time over the last 18 months, but said he's got even more details to air in the book. In the Times story on immigration, King was quoted as asking, white nationalists, white supremacists, Western civilization, how did that language become offensive? Why did I sit in classes teaching me about the merits of our history and our civilization? The publisher remarks fueled a national backlash that resulted in Republican House leaders stripping him of committees, which he has not regained. King has repeatedly insisted the Times reporter misquoted him. Speaking about the book's coverage of those machinations over the time, since King only narrowly defeated J.D. Schulte in 2018. He said, quote, that primary opponent, that was a minor part of the whole picture. I want people to read it and learn it. If I could tell the story in an op-ed or a press release, I would have done that by now. But it is too complex for that. All right, let us now turn to the local and nation section on page A3. Headline, 100 new COVID cases in Woodbury County from Sioux City. The recent spike in positive cases of the coronavirus in Woodbury County continued into the weekend, as public health officials reported 100 new cases were added on Saturday. The number of cases over the last 24 hours was reported by Siouxland District Health Department. That comes on the heels of the health department citing 87 cases on Thursday, which had been the largest single-day total in some time in Woodbury County, while among another large batch of positives on Friday was news that two elderly women had died, taking the county total of those who have died to 61 since March. The health department noted that the 100 cases Saturday were out of more than 500 tests, for a positivity rate of approaching 20%. Quote, there is also a lot of testing happening. Woodbury County has been seeing a significant increase in COVID-19 cases recently. These cases are not concentrated in any specific age or population demographic. All age ranges are represented in our case counts, indicating significant spread in the community, the release said. Overall, there have been more than 4,900 cases in Woodbury County. A key statistical measure local and state officials are watching is the 14-day average of positive tests in each of Iowa's 99 counties. Woodbury County, as of Saturday, has a 14-day positivity rate of 14.9%, up from 14.8% the day before. The 15% mark was established by the Iowa Department of Education as the point at which school districts can ask to move entire school buildings from in-person to online learning. In recent days, the top positivity rates have been in Northwest Iowa, with the top four in Iowa as Sioux, Lyon, Plymouth, and O'Brien counties. All right, next story. Headline, Committee Considers School Boundary Changes. Subheadline, Group Meets for the First Time Monday, from Sioux City. By early 2021, a school district committee is expected to recommend whether there's a need to change boundary lines for Sioux City's three public high schools. That committee was initially going to meet for the first time on August 31st, but that session will now be held Monday, after a revised timeline approved in the September 14th meeting of the Sioux City School Board. Board President Jeremy Saint said the delay came about since statistics initially pinpointed in the process had summarized incorrect information about the numbers of students at schools that ultimately feed into North High School. Board member Dan Greenwell said the key thing is to have similar sized high enrollments at East, North, and West High Schools. Once there becomes a disparity where one high school is much larger than the others, or, quote, getting out of sync, he said, that could mean some courses would not be offered in the smaller schools to the educational hindrance of students. Quote, you start to get an equity issue, Greenwell said. He shared a host of 2019 through 2020 enrollment statistics on schools in the district in the meeting. Greenwell noted North currently leads all high schools in enrollment, with East in second and with West trailing North by a margin of 299 students. Quote, the numbers are steady as a rock on West. They are not declining. They are not growing. North is the one that is growing. East is not growing, Greenwell said. Overall, Greenwell said he believes that the current boundaries ultimately won't need to be changed. He said a key future factor will center on how many transfers are allowed or denied from students seeking to transfer from one high school to another. Board member Monique Scarlett said the growth of homes in Sioux City seems to be heavy in the eastern part of the city, so she wonders if that could result in a relative drop in the number of students at West. Board member Taylor Goodwin said it appears that many of those homes on the east side are single-occupant apartments, so they may not have school-aged children living there. The process will include boundary committee meetings on Monday, October 12th, November 16th, December 7th, and December 21st, a final session when any recommendations to advance the school board in January will likely be settled. The November 16 meeting is expected to include analysis from a consultant, the RSP and Associates demographic from Overland Park, Kansas, and a five-year enrollment forecast for each school. Greenwell said the process started off on the wrong foot with incorrect stats. Quote, I am very disappointed that our own district did not have the current boundaries correctly identified after numerous reminders and prompts. Further, the lack of knowledge on the existing and forecasted enrollment by building is astounding. This is work that we should have been doing all along, Greenwell said. The people in the committee include board member Saint, Greenwell, and Goodvin. Others include school district administrators Paul Gaussman, Kim Berliank, Jim Vanderloo, Brian Burnright, Jen Gomez, Brian Fahrenholz, John Pritchard, and Mandy Mayo, along with six principals and assistant principals at the three high schools. All right, let's look to the brief stories. Headline, Road to Close for Riverfront Work. A portion of Larson Park Road will close on Monday morning until further notice so that riverfront development work can be performed. The Sioux City Parks and Recreation Department announced the closure of Larson Park Road, covering the section from Floyd Boulevard to the Anderson Dance Pavilion Loop. By utilizing Larson Park Road at Hamilton Boulevard, drivers will be able to access the following locations: the Hilton Garden Inn, Crave, Sioux City Marina, Lewis and Clark Visitor Center, Lewis and Clark Interpretive Center, and the Betty Strong Encounter Center, the Flight 232 Memorial, the Anderson Dance Pavilion, and the Chris Larson Park Playgrounds and Shelter. All right, another story that doesn't have anything to do with coronavirus, thankfully. Headline, West High Homecoming Royalty Named. The 2020 West High School Homecoming Week was held through Friday, and during the events, Gustavo Orlana Santos, a son of Mayada Santos Gustavo Orleana, was named king, and Lizeth Martinez, the daughter of Maria Topete, was named queen. The homecoming football game was played Thursday when the Wolverines lost 44-7 to Council Bluffs Abraham Lincoln. The homecoming dance and parade were not held this year due to precautions about the spread of the novel coronavirus. The Monday coronation was live-streamed to allow many people to watch. Since the coronation was limited to attendance from involved staff, royalty candidates, and four guests of each royalty candidate. Candidates for homecoming queen were Rosario Chalacan, daughter of Bridget and Annabelle Chalacan, Gabrielle Comstock, daughter of Angela and Keith Comstock, Danny Dolan, daughter of Danielle and Mac Dolan, Taden Fairbanks, daughter of Dara and Chad Fairbanks, Madeline Ford, daughter of Kelly and Mike Henry and Rodney Ford, Emma Hall, daughter of Amy Andrews and Andrew Hall, Anne Hune, daughter of Hune Nguyen and B. Tran, Jordan Cray, daughter of Linda and Kurt Cray, and Abigail Nelson, daughter of Sarah Nelson. Candidates for homecoming king were Landon Barker, son of Heather and Travis Barker, Caleb Belt, son of Izzy and Adam Belt, Brian Cruz, son of Victoria Saldana, Michael Duax, son of Mary and Tim Duax, Easton Gillen, son of Sonny and James Gillen, Aldo Grivala, son of Felipe Mancillas, Keenan Higa, son of Megan Merrigan and Josh Hegna, Tony Nago, son of Andy Nguyen and Tan Nago, and Cesar Vasquez, son of Sarah and Arturo Vasquez. Alrighty, I'll turn back to the front page and read a story of national significance because it does have a significant effect on our politics and the race coming forward in the next few months and just kind of how our law and society is shaped. Headline, Trump, quote, vote without delay on high court pick from Washington. President Donald Trump on Saturday urged the Republican-run Senate to consider, quote, without delay, his coming nomination to fill Supreme Court vacancy created by the death of Justice Ruth Bader Ginsburg just 6 weeks before the election. The White House is moving quickly to select a nominee, probably before the first presidential debate 10 days away, for a seat held by Ginsburg, who spent her final years on the bench as the unquestioned leader of the court's liberal wing. Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell, Republican of Kentucky, vowed to call a vote for Trump's nominee, but Democrats countered that Republicans should follow the precedent that the GOP legislators set in 2016 by refusing to consider a Supreme Court choice in the run-up to an election. And one Republican senator already broke ranks. Maine's Susan Collins, who is in a tough re-election battle, said Saturday that she believed replacing Ginsburg should be the decision of the president who was elected on November 3rd. Three more defections from the GOP ranks would be needed to stop Trump's nominee from joining the court. The impending clash over the vacant seat, when to fill it and with whom, scrambles the stretch run of the presidential race for a nation already reeling from the pandemic that has killed nearly 200,000 people, left millions unemployed, and has heightened partisan tensions and anger. Trump said Saturday that a pick would probably come in the next week and would most likely be a woman. The president, who tweeted earlier that the nomination should be taken up, quote, without delay, rejected Collins' view as he departed for a rally in North Carolina, where he could offer a first look as to how he would work the vacancy into his campaign. Quote, we won and have an obligation as the winners to pick who we want. That's not the next president, he told reporters as he left the White House. Quote, hopefully I'll be the next president, but we're here now, right now, we're here, and we have an obligation to the voters, all the people, the millions of people that put us here in the form of a victory. We have an obligation to them, to all of those voters. McConnell pledged to Trump in a phone call Friday night to bring the choice to a vote, though he has not said if it would be before the election. Democratic presidential nominee Joe Biden said that any selection should come after November 3rd. Voters should pick the president and the president should pick the justice to consider, he said. The president this month added 20 more names to his roster of potential court nominees, and aides in recent days have focused on a short list heavy on female candidates, according to four White House aides and officials close to the process. They spoke on condition of anonymity because they were not authorized to publicly discuss private conversations. The president could announce his choice this coming week and almost certainly before his first debate with Biden on September 29th, according to officials. Those under close consideration for the high court include three women who are federal appeals court judges. Amy Coney Barrett, beloved among conservatives and an early favorite. Barbara Lagoa, who is Hispanic and comes from the battleground state of Florida. And Allison Jones Rushing, who clerked for Justice Clarence Thomas and for Neil Gorsuch when the current Trump-appointed judge was an appeals court judge. Beyond the idea of replacing Ginsburg with a woman, aides view the selection of a female nominee on the eve of the presidential election as a possible counterweight of sorts to Biden's choice of California Senator Kamala Harris as his running mate. Harris would be the nation's first female vice president. At least one man, appeals court judge Emil Thapar, is also under consideration. A McConnell ally from Kentucky, he has been screened by Trump's team for the past openings, and he would be the first Asian American on the high court. McConnell, who sets the calendar in the Senate and has made judicial appointments his priority, declared unequivocally in a statement that Trump's nominee would receive a confirmation vote. In 2016, McConnell refused to consider President Barack Obama's nominee months before the election, eventually preventing a vote on Judge Merrick Garland. Senate Democratic leader Chuck Schumer of New York convened a conference call with Democratic senators at midday on Saturday, according to a person on the private call who was not authorized to discuss it publicly and spoke on condition of anonymity. He told senators the number one goal must be to communicate the stakes of the confirmation vote. Schumer also warned that if Republicans push through a nomination, nothing is off the table for Senate rule changes to come, the person said. The death of Ginsburg, a champion of women's rights and a pop culture icon, led to a wave of mourning, including an informal memorial at the Supreme Court and a protest outside McConnell's house. It also seems certain to stoke enthusiasm in both political parties, as the election could now be viewed as a referendum on the high court's decisions, including the future of abortion rights. Democrats raised more than $60 million in the hours after Ginsburg's death, showing how the liberal icon's passing and the contentious nomination fight have already galvanized the party's base. A confirmation vote in the Senate is not guaranteed, even with a Republican majority. All right, let's now turn to the opinion section, section A of the paper. And let's read the three letters to the editor for today's paper. headline, or I guess title of the letter is Take Precautions During Harvest. And the letter writer writes, Harvest is upon us, and for many in our farming communities, this is the most wonderful time of the year. A time to work with family, gather our crops, and admire the results of hard work and long days. As we look forward to this season, please let this be a reminder of things we can all be aware of to keep everyone safe. As combines, grain carts, semis, and other seasonal equipment take to the roads, pay extra attention to traffic. These large machines are often maneuvering slowly, so please be patient, pass carefully, and understand that they will do the same. As the crop is harvested, wildlife are on the move, searching for new cover. Be sure to check ditches and roadsides for deer on the move, especially around sunup and sundown. Most in our area receive drought-relieving rain, but given the remaining dry conditions, check to be sure harvest equipment has an operating fire extinguisher available. In the event of a field fire, consider being prepared by having a loaded water wagon ready or having a disc hooked up to assist your local fire department. Take time to enjoy this time of the year and have a safe and happy harvest. Signed, Brianne Streck, Mobile, Iowa, Woodbury County Farm Bureau Board Member. Next letter is titled, Wear a Mask to Protect Others. And they write, I was in a doctor's office where everyone but one person there was wearing a mask. I asked her why she wasn't wearing a mask and she said, quote, if I get it, I get it and I'll deal with it. I looked at another person working with her and they looked at me and shook their head. Many of the people that go there and other places are old people like me, and many are people young and old with underlying conditions that make them particularly vulnerable. It may be that she never gets the virus, or that she maybe get the virus and it may be that she is merely a carrier exposing vulnerable population to a grave illness that they may die from. But to her, it was like, so what if someone did get it from her because she was a carrier? It would be their loss, not hers. Therein lies the difference between those who think only of themselves and those who care about others. And wherever you go see people without masks, and these same people also don't bother to keep the ass social distance, I truly hope that none of them get the virus or have to face a time when they find out that they are carriers who didn't mask up and exposed others, who then got the virus and then died. The problem is, I'm not sure that they would care at all as long as it doesn't happen to them. Signed, Jerry Eaton of Sioux City. And our third and final letter comes, is headlined, Siouxland Y Summer Program a Success. And the letter writer writes, I want to commend the administration, staff, and leadership of the Siouxland Y for a successful summer care/camp program this year. The Siouxland Y successfully had over 80 children grades pre-kindergarten through 5th grade attend its 2-month program without usage of masks on kids and no one testing positive for COVID-19. They made significant COVID adjustments from prior year summer programs and still maintained an outstanding fun program for the kids this year. It's unfortunate that this success story right here in Siouxland isn't getting its proper recognition. I would also think our proper schools, our local school system, would want to mimic this kind of success in their own programs. All right, we'll now turn to the obituary section of today's paper. We'll start out with Amy Colleen Barbie of Dakota City. 42, the daughter of Carol M. Lee, was born on August 14, 1978 in Council Bluffs, Iowa. Amy passed away Friday, September 11th of natural causes at her residence. A celebration of life will be noon to 4 p.m. Sunday, September 27th at Riverside Park Shelter No. 5. All family and friends are welcome. We will be having a potluck, one of Amy's favorite things to do. The family is being assisted by Waterbury Funeral Service of Sergeant Bluff. Amy grew up in Sioux City and attended public schools there to complete the 11th grade. She met Brandon Barbie as they married on July 23rd of 1998. They had been together for 25 years. They were the love of each other's lives. Of this union, they had two beautiful daughters, Brittany and Chesty. Amy worked at many jobs and most recent being at Divvy and Inception Outdoors, working side by side with Brandon. Amy was proud of her family and loved them so much. She was extremely excited when she became a grandma with her first grandbaby, Xander. Then came Axel, then Uriah, and another on the way, which she was looking forward to holding. She was a good mom to Brittany and Chelsea, who have many good memories of their mom. Amy loved playing with the grandbabies. She was a great person and had a big heart, always willing to help anyone in need. If you needed a ride, you could call Amy and she would be there. She loved the outdoors, camping, and fishing with Brandon and the girls, family and friends, and her fur babies. Her most favorite place was Ponca State Park. She loved family get-togethers at the park for picnics and cookouts, or just going to someone's home for a barbecue. And they asked that we will miss Amy's presence and please direct memorials to Amy's family. Next is Marguerite E. Osterling of Cherokee, Iowa, 99, died Friday on September 18th. A private family services will be held September 22nd at 10:30 a.m. at Boothby Funeral Home in Cherokee. Burial will be at Cherokee Memory Gardens. Private family visitation September 22nd, 9 a.m. to service time. Social distancing and masks required at the service. Next is Clark J. Godfrey of Sioux City, 86, died Friday, September 18th. Visitation will be September 25th from 9:30 to 10:30 a.m. at Christy Smith Funeral Home's Morningside Chapel. A private burial will be held at Memorial Park Cemetery. Next, Lewis L. Storm of Homer, Nebraska, 85, passed away on Thursday, September 17th at a hospital in Omaha. Graveside services will be 10:30 a.m. Tuesday at Hillcrest Cemetery in Decatur, Nebraska, with Pastor Eric Meyer officiating. Visitation will be 5 to 7 p.m. Monday at Homer United Methodist Church in Homer, Nebraska. Arrangements are under the direction of Munderlow Smith Funeral Home in Pender, Nebraska. If you are planning to attend any of the services, please respect social distancing and wear a face covering. Lewis L. Storm, the son of Alfred and Leanna Storm, was born on May 5, 1935, near Macy, Nebraska. He was raised in the Macy area and graduated from Macy High School in 1953. After high school, he worked as a laborer and water truck driver on a road construction crew in Bellevue, Nebraska. That first fall, he returned to the farm in Macy to help with harvest and never left. On September 18, 1955, Lewis and Shirley M. Uding were united in marriage. They were blessed with two sons, Michael and Greg. It was a good marriage. Shirley managed to raise the three of them well. The couple lived and farmed in the Macy area much of their lives and later moved to Homer. Most who knew Lewis recognized that he was a great husband and father, businessman, farmer, truck driver, and even an occasional gambler. Lewis was outgoing and loved talking to others. He could sit on the bench at the park, the mall, etc., and strike up a conversation with just about anyone. On his one trip to Germany several years ago, he even reported talking to a German man on the bench beside him. Although he knew no German and the gentleman in question apparently knew little English, what came through in those conversations is that he actually paid attention and cared what other people said. Although Lewis would describe himself as, quote, retired from farming, it would have been hard to prove by his behavior until recently. In fact, his boys and grandchildren will probably tell you that Lewis had a valid Class A commercial driver's license in his pocket when he died. He took immense pride in his ability to remain physically active and continue to drive trucks. Second to driving, he enjoyed swapping truck driving stories with whoever he had stories to tell. Lewis was a member of the Reformed Church of America in Macy and later attended the United Methodist Church in Homer. Lewis was a faithful man and lived his faith every day. Having grown up relatively poor during the Depression, he was always ready to help feed anyone who appeared hungry, and he was a charitable man. One of his most notable charitable accomplishments, among many, was organizing an effort to build a new home for a family in Mississippi who lost their home to Hurricane Katrina. Lewis, in lieu of flowers, memorials are suggested to the St. Jude Children's Research Hospital in Memphis, Tennessee. Next is Ronald and Marilyn Millage, Sioux City. 81, Ronald died on September 6th, and age 82, Marilyn died on September 17th of this year. Service, I assume for both of them, will be on September 25th at 10:30 a.m. at Matter Die Parish Immaculate Conception Church. Burial will be at Memorial Park Cemetery. Visitation will be September 24th, 5 to 7 p.m. at Meyer Brothers Colonial Chapel. Next, Margaret Mary Beacom of Rockville, Maryland, formerly of Sioux City. Peggy Mary Beacom, 67, of Rockville, Maryland, formerly of Sioux City, passed away peacefully on Tuesday, October 22nd, 2019, in Rockville, surrounded by family. A private family service will take place in California. Stories and condolences can be sent to Peggy. become.memorial@gmail.com. So email account set up for this occasion. She was born on October 24th, 1952, in Sioux City, Iowa, the eldest of four children. Peggy graduated from Helan High School in 1970 and soon after moved to California, where she spent most of her life by her beloved ocean. She worked as a dispatcher for the Arizona Department of Public Safety and later California Highway Patrol, where she earned multiple commendations for her service. Peggy went on to earn certification as a criminal analyst and contracting with the Department of Justice in California. Peggy lived her life to the fullest in work and play. She was an avid reader, loved music, treasured family, and had the quintessential ability to send the perfect card. Peggy had a heart that connected with others and kept those around her laughing even through the difficult times. She was blessed with lifelong friendships and is deeply missed by family and friends. Her laughter, hugs, and legendary wit will be remembered fondly. Merry meet and merry Pat, till merry meet again, sweet one. I guess that's a song there. So, next, Kathy Ann Ball of South Sioux City. Miss Ball, 59, of South Sioux City, passed away on Friday, September 18th at a local hospital. Services will be 2 p.m. Tuesday at Moore and Becker Hunt Funeral Home, with the Reverend Douglas Dill officiating. Burial will be in Dakota City Cemetery. Visitation will be 1 hour prior to the service at the funeral home. Online condolences may be given at MeyerBrothersChapels.com. Kathy was born on September 2, 1961 in Sioux City, Iowa, the daughter of Arnold and Marilyn Watson Haddock. She graduated from South Sioux City High School and attended Western Iowa Tech Community College, earning an associate's degree. Kathy worked as a paralegal for several law firms until retirement. She enjoyed gardening, was a master at crossword puzzles, and loved her dogs. Next, Irma K. Fitch of Ponca, Nebraska, 80, died Sunday, March 29, 2020. Celebration of life visitation will be September 26 from 2 to 6 p.m. at Jackson Legion Hall. Warren Becker Hunt Funeral Home will arrange. Next, Eleanor Munger of Sioux City, formerly of Vermilion, South Dakota. Miss Munger, 99, of Sioux City, formerly of Vermilion, passed away on Thursday, September 17th at a Sioux City hospital. Because of concerns about COVID-19, a family memorial service will be planned for a later date. Eleanor Elizabeth Woody was born on September 30th, 1920 in Springfield, Illinois, to George and Talvi Woody. She had one sibling, a younger sister, Sally Marilyn Butcher, who is now deceased. Eleanor was raised on her family's farm near Pleasant Plains, Illinois, and attended McMurray College in Jacksonville, Illinois. As a farm youngster, she became an accomplished horsewoman, and while at McMurray, she was part of the college horsemanship team, which competed with other school teams. In addition, she also competed individually in various riding and showmanship events. After 2 years of study at McMurray, Eleanor transferred to the University of Illinois at Champaign, Illinois, from which she graduated in 1942 with a Bachelor of Arts degree, a sociology major. She was a member of the Chi Omega sorority while a student at the University of Illinois. Following this, she taught in a country school in Sangamon County, Illinois, near Pleasant Plains. In December of 1943, at the home of her parents in Pleasant Plains, she was united in marriage with Stanley P. Munger of Sioux City. Her husband, being a newly commissioned officer in the Naval Reserve with orders in hand, was allowed a short and hasty honeymoon, typical of the times. It consisted of a couple days in nearby St. Louis and a day and a half in Chicago, using the old Illinois Railroad Green Diamond parlor car service for transportation. The couple always recalled the event with good humor. Eleanor was able to join Stan at his first duty station, the Amphibious Warfare Base in Coronado, California, for 3 months before he was assigned shipboard duty in the Pacific. During the next 18 months, there were only two occasions where she and Stan were able to share a little time together as a result of his ship returning to the States on special assignment. Long periods of separation, filled with anxiety and uncertainty, were common for all married couples in the military services. Eleanor spent some of her waiting time working for Time magazine in Champaign, Illinois. Following Stan's discharge from active duty in January of 1946, the couple moved to Sioux City, then in 1947 to Vermilion, where he became engaged in the farm management and livestock farming business. During the years following her arrival in the Vermilion community, Eleanor served in a variety of sorority, social, and charitable activities, including and especially activities involving the Congregational Church, now known as UCC Vermilion, Women's Fellowship Program, as well as serving as a, for a number of years as a deaconess. Over the years, she served in all offices of the Chapter BL of the PEO Sisterhood, including president in 1967. Also, at one time, she served as an advisor to the University of South Dakota chapter of Chi Omega Sorority. In 1970, Eleanor and Stanley were honored to be selected as, quote, Parents of the Year by Iowa State University, from which all their children graduated. She was also especially proud to have been honored with Paul Harris Fellowship Medal in recognition of her devoted support of her husband and the local Rotary Club at the time of her husband's service as governor of District 5610 Rotary International. Eleanor was noted for her outstanding culinary skills. She collected recipes and cookbooks and made special effort to instruct and pass on her culinary talent and information to her children and grandchildren, even to the point of making a videotape of instructions for preparing a several generations old family recipe that the family knows as, quote, chili sauce. Throughout her life, it was great joy to Eleanor's heart to know the companionship and fellowship of her beloved lady friends and to participate in their social events, entertaining, bridge playing, and sharing family times together. Always attracted to outdoor activities, she enjoyed hiking the trails of Estes Park, Colorado, where the family often vacationed, and she was an active participant in the fishing, sailing, and other water activities during summers at the family cottage on Gull Lake, Minnesota. Eleanor was a master sailor, and in 1972, she and Stan acquired a sloop-rigged Cruisemaster 37 sailboat designed for ocean cruising, and this began a seven-year series of cruises starting in Mystic, Connecticut, and ending in Town Road, Tortola, British West Indies in 1979. Since the two sailed alone, as the only crew, Eleanor performed equally all the shipboard duties from standing watch and watch to navigating night or day, storm or calm. And finally, the family suggests donations in lieu of other remembrances to the United Church of Christ in Vermilion. There. Next is Penny S. Hedmark, H-E-D-E-M-A-R-K of Sioux City. Age 70, died Thursday, September 17th. Memorial service will be September 24th at 2 p.m. Meyer Brothers Colonial Chapel will arrange. Burial will be at Memorial Park Cemetery, and visitation will be 1 hour prior to the service. Next is Donald H. Molstad of Hinton, Iowa. Donald Molstad, 71, of rural Hinton, passed away on April 20th of this year. Memorial Mass will be 11 a.m. Friday, September 25th at Holy Cross St. Michael's Catholic Church in Sioux City, Iowa. Due to COVID-19, face masks are required. Only condolences may be sent to MeyerBrothersChapels.com. Donald was born on March 25th, 1949, to Howard and Ella Marie Davis Molstad in Sioux City, Iowa. He was the fourth generation to grow up on the Molstad family farm in Mobile, Iowa. After high school, Don miraculously survived an electrical accident. The accident changed Don's life path in many ways, a path that led him to the love of his life and wife of nearly 49 years, Sheila Bayan. He graduated from the University of South Dakota in 1972 and then Creighton Law School in 1975. After law school, Donald and Sheila moved to Sioux City, where Don started a successful law practice and was a United States bankruptcy trustee for almost 41 years. His loyal office staff will always be considered part of the family. Don and Sheila were blessed with two children, Eric and Nora. One of the biggest joys in Don's life was being able to take his children fishing. There are fishermen, and then there is Don Molstad. He continued to hone his craft over years of fishing in Canada and on the family pond. Always the teacher, Don passed his love and wisdom of fishing on to his grandchildren. Farming was not part of Don's original plan, but as fate would have it, he got back into the family business. Don was always early to rise to do chores or rushing home over lunch to check on new baby calves. His work ethic was unmatched. Over the years, Don built a network of friends through work, singing with the Blessed Sacrament Celebration Choir, bridge club, tennis, and fishing trips. Don always enjoyed a great conversation, especially about farming, fishing, and family. Don was a great attorney, an excellent fisherman, a loving husband, and the best father and papa to his three biggest loves, Mackenzie, Gunner, and Patrick. Memorials, the family would like to extend a special thank you to Don's office staff, Judy, Kayla, and Mona for the many years of dedication and support, and to all the medical professionals involved in Don's care. Memorials may be directed to the Michael J. Fox Parkinson's Foundation or the Lee and Penny Anderson Epilepsy Unit at Children's in St. Paul, Minnesota. Next is Delilah Mary Fuhrer, that's F-U-E-H-R-E-R, of Sioux City. Miss Fuhrer, 95, of Sioux City, passed away on Tuesday, May 19th at a local care center. Memorial Mass will be 10 a.m. Saturday, September 26th at St. Joseph Catholic Church in Sioux City. Due to COVID-19, no visitation or luncheon will be held. Meyer Brothers Colonial Chapel is in charge of arrangements. Delilah, the daughter of Edward and Gertrude Apps Jordan, was born on May 6, 1925 in Belden, Nebraska. She attended school in Hubbard, Nebraska. On February 19, 1946, Delilah was married in united in marriage to Edward William Hinsman in Sioux City, and he passed away on March 31st of 1959. On November 8, 1961, Delilah married Edward Fuhrer in Sioux City, and he preceded her in death on October 18, 1997. Delilah worked at Sioux City Battery, ran a janitorial service from 1960 to 1973, delivered the Shopper's Guide from 1983 to 2008, and was a donut maker at Casey's from 1985 to 2005. Delilah was a member of St. Joseph Catholic Church in Sioux City. She loved going to the mall and walking her rounds. She would walk three rounds three times a week, and if you went with her, you'd better be ready to keep up with her because she got up and went. So, there, quite a life there. Michael Dwayne Monlux, that's M-O-N-L-U-X, of South Sioux City. Mr. Monlux, 73, passed away peacefully on September 18th at a Sioux City hospital. A private family gathering will be held at a later time. Michael Dwayne Monlux was born on June 16, 1947, in Sioux City, Iowa, to Dwayne and Leda Monlux. He was a proud Marine and served his country during the Vietnam War. He loved playing golf and going to the YMCA to work out. Mike had a big personality and loved life. When someone needed help, he was the first one there to lend a hand. Mike was loved and will be remembered by so many that knew him. Alright, next, Randall D. Dunnigan of Sioux City. Mr. Dunnigan, 65, died Thursday, September 17th at a local hospital. Services will be 10:30 a.m. Wednesday at Redeemer Lutheran Church. Burial will be at the Fairview Albaton Cemetery in Sloan, Iowa. Visitation will be 5 to 8 p.m. Tuesday with a prayer service at 7 p.m. at Waterbury Funeral Service of Sioux City. Randy was born on December 1, 1954 in Onawa, Iowa, the son of Daryl Dunnigan and Mary Olson. He grew up in the Albaton area and then moved to Sergeant Bluff, where he graduated. After graduation, he joined the U.S. Army. He served in both Berlin and Korea. After returning from overseas, he began his career as a mail carrier with the U.S. Post Office, where he was still employed at the time of his death. He also spent several years as a volunteer for the Sergeant Bluff Fire Department. Randy was a mail carrier for 42 years. His carrier route was primarily in the downtown area, in which he not only delivered the mail, but built lifelong friendships with those on his route and those he worked with. He raised three girls, which he always claimed was the reason he had no hair. It's still up for debate. He spent hours in the family's backyard sitting on a bucket over the years catching all of his daughter's pitches. Randy was actively involved in coaching his daughter's sporting teams and travel teams over the years. Randy was blessed with six grandchildren who he loved spending time with and attending their sporting events. He was an avid Iowa State fan and enjoyed camping, fishing, hiking, decorating Christmas cookies with his grandkids, celebrating the 4th of July, going to the church at Redeemer where he was a member, riding his antique tractor on the country gravel roads, and traveling the world. He made several memories during his trips to Costa Rica, Panama, Amsterdam, Thailand, Vietnam, Laos, and Cambodia. Well, sounds pretty well traveled. Randy enjoyed backpacking with only a backpack and deciding his routes and places to sleep along the way. Life was always an adventure on his travels. His most recently loved spending his time planning and designing the home he was going to build and retire in, on land he had purchased, set on top of a hill where he could sit on his porch and watch the sun rise and set every day. Next, Mr. Jason T. Buchholz of Sioux City, 44, passed away unexpectedly on Sunday, September 13th. Service will be 10 a.m. Monday at Country Celebrations with Pastor Lori Van Cura officiating. Burial will be in Memorial Park Cemetery. Visitation will be 4 to 6 p.m. today with family present at Waterbury Funeral Service of Sioux City. Jason Thayer Buchholz was born on September 27, 1975 in Sioux City, Iowa. The son of Gary Buchholz and Kim Free, he attended North High School and later earned his GED to further education through Tree Care Industry Association and International Society of Arbor Culture. Jason married Christy Jensen in 2008. They later divorced in 2012. In 2015, he married Nikki Leadham until her passing in 2018. Jason, a family-oriented man, found his pleasure in spending time with his children, nieces, and his twin brother. He found wisdom and guidance in living a spiritual life and often volunteered his leisure hours at AA meetings. His recovery and faith provided life principles he could impart unto his children. Many times you would see him with his daily reflections book, aligning himself with the lesson he could glean for the day. Jason, alongside with his twin brother Jeremy, worked as an arborist for 22 years and enjoyed it all the while. Jason was a tender-hearted man whose mission on earth was to make people smile. Everywhere Jason went, his presence would light up the room. In his humor, he could make a stranger a friend with quick and effortless laughter. Jason will be remembered as an amazing father, brother, uncle, son, friend, and mentor. He worked for Compressed Steel and then in 1998 started at Midwest Tree Care. Jason was a member of the TCIA, ISA, Sunnybrook Community Church, Alcoholics Anonymous, and Narcotics Anonymous. So, very well. Vincenta Vita Hummel of Sioux City, age 69, died Wednesday, September 16th. Service will be 4 p.m. Saturday, September 26th at Waterbury Funeral Service of Sioux City. Alrighty, well, our time together is almost done, so let's finish off with Dear Abby. It's kind of one of my favorite things to read as we close out our time together. Headline to Abby's column is Friend Playing Cupid Neglects to Mention Man's Drug Habit. Dear Abby, my hairdresser, former neighbor and friend, recommended her unemployed brother to do some minor repairs to my home. He and his sister were trying to push me into a relationship. I am a widow with no children. I have no mortgages, car notes, etc. I'm not wealthy, but I am well set. My hairdresser recently mentioned that her brother was using crack cocaine again. I'm furious that she didn't disclose her brother's addiction sooner. Should I let it go or confront her about this? I really don't want to lose my hairdresser. Signed, Styled Right in the South. And Abby writes, Dear Styled, you are certainly free to ask your hairdresser why she didn't tell you her brother had a crack habit before recommending him to do repairs in your home. It's a fair question. If nothing is missing and the repairs were done properly. Refrain from doing it while you are angry. If you hang on to your temper, there is no reason why your relationship with the woman should end. As to a relationship with the brother, no law says you must have one with him. You don't have to be confrontational, but be less available. As you spend more time with other people, he will get the message. Dear Abby, my son, age 30, is getting a liver transplant soon, and my ex-husband, i.e. the son's father, refuses to use personal protective equipment in his enclosures with others because he thinks his civil liberties are being violated. We don't communicate often because the new wife is a very unpleasant person who took my house away 10 years ago. I'm okay with that because I landed on my feet in a much better situation, but I do not trust her or speak to her. I have left posts on Facebook requesting that those who intend to help my son use personal protective equipment for at least 2 weeks before seeing him. So far, my ex has not responded. How can I get him to understand that this is his, in capital letters, child, and not wearing PPE could kill him? Signed, COVID Concerned in Georgia. Abby writes, Dear COVID Concerned, your son's transplant specialist should be asked to send your ex a registered letter explaining the precautions that must be taken if he visits his son and how important they are. I am crossing my fingers that the doctor will do it, but your son must understand that if daddy is unwilling to cooperate, he, in capital letters, your son, not you, is the person who must enforce that rule because he will be immune compromised and his life depends on it. As much as you might wish to, you cannot police every encounter daddy has with his adult son. And finally, Dear Abby, last year relatives said they would attend a party we were hosting. They didn't come and we never received any reason why. We had to pay for their dinners. We may see them at an upcoming social event. How should we greet them? Signed, Annoyed in Ohio. Abby writes, Dear Annoyed, what your relatives did was rude and inconsiderate. When you see them, say hello and calmly ask why they didn't show up. Be polite, which they weren't, and in the future remove them from your guest list if their answer doesn't satisfy you. Alrighty, well, that pretty much ends our time together reading the Sioux City Journal for Sunday, September 20th of 2020. Just kind of quick recap of the weather. It looks like pretty much our highs are in the 80s and our lows in the 50s. And it'll be consistent through the next 5 days. I really don't see too much variation from that. Just kind of low to mid 80s in the high and in the upper 50s at night. So your reading has been done today by Trevor Brass. And I enjoy bringing you the Sioux City Journal. I hope you have a wonderful week. Stay safe and take care of each other, everyone. Until next time, bye-bye.